encourage you to participate as much as possible. I really can't read it is. I call me stress the sitting form, but you don't want to confuse what Zazen is with a particular body posture in a particular setting. Zazen itself has nothing whatsoever to do with the body posture. This simply is the easiest way. Now, some of you particularly who have sat just their beginning sessions will not believe that that's the easy way, but it really is. It's a way that we can explore, look deeper into this shunyata, see, which is our basic essential nature, Buddha nature, if you like. If you want to go into more generic terms, you can call it oneness. See what this really is at a sort of a profound state. And this is the easiest way for that expression to manifest. Always, you know, whenever we use words when we're talking about the Dharma, there's a yes and a no side. And in a certain sense, any words that we use are somewhat misleading. And this goes right back to the Buddha. See, after his years of struggle, asceticism, finally attaining great realization. And the next realization that hit him was, wow, you know, there's no point in trying to explain this to people. And that really was the next obstacle that he had to deal with. See? And he spent some time considering whether or not to even make the effort. And fortunately for all of us, he decided that even though he was going to expound that which cannot be expounded, that we still do it. We still turn the wheel. And then, of course, along the way, some other pretty notable folks picked it up. Down to someone that I've learned to really enjoy. More than that, I go to for motivation when I find that I've allowed myself to slip into a little bit of depression, or I've gotten tired and I wonder, is the struggle worth it? And that's Dogen Zenji. And he is remarkable in what he does and the way he expounds this Dharma. Because the very doubting, the very words, see, that are misleading, even the aspect of misleading is a manifestation, see, of this most amazing Dharma. There is nothing outside of this Dharma. And Zazen itself simply means no separation, or Zazen, the way of sitting, but no separation. And this is the essential point of our practice. This no separation. In a certain way, we can say that is sanctuary. See, that means, in a certain sense, see, that the delusional struggle of dichotomy, categories, of oppositions, has been put aside. That the ego-driven mind, the grasping mind that clings, that sets up these categories, these separations, see, has been released. And what that means to each one of us, see, is that at last we've sort of reached home ground. And where you are, as you are, you take full responsibility. Now, we're talking here in using concepts, words and phrases. And, you know, the old masters, see, have cautioned, see, that this practice, see, is outside words, phrases, concepts. And the realization of that, see, is absolutely true. I say that realization, see, this is the Kensho experience. Is this really an experience? Of course it is. See, without Kensho, there is no Buddha Dharma. Or I should say Buddhism, see, because Buddha himself would have had no realization. But if we make the mistake of making this a huge obstacle, which we do, the Mumankan, the gateless gate, and what an amazing barrier, you know, we set up for ourselves. There'll be those, you know, catch the words, see, it's just my life. Well, if that's absolutely true, it's just your life as you are experiencing it, in the delusional sense, do you really believe that a Buddha, see, with this innate genius, think of the force of his personality, would have had to have put all of those years into that intense struggle that nearly killed him, to simply say that my sucky little life is it? You know, at that point, if that was his realization, he'd have scrambled back to Dad's palace and all of those wonderful, beautiful ladies that Dad had put around him. If that's it, see, why would he have taken up, you know, a begging bowl? And for the next, what, 40, 50 years, 50 years, I guess, you know, was never alone. That's mind-boggling to my mind already, to have students around you continuously. They said, was never alone, see. But come on, even the intellect can grasp that there's a flaw in the reasoning. If the life that you're in here right now, and you're, that's why you're here, see, there's something just a little bit haywire with the kinds of lives that we live. And we intuitively know that there's something that can be done about it. Of course. See, again, common sense. If I take a grain of wheat, throw it into the earth, it will try to grow as a stalk of wheat. That's its essential nature. If I take an acorn, throw it into the ground. See, it will try to grow. I mean, it will try. You give it just any care, a drop of water, a tiny bit of old rocky soil, and it will try to grow into an oak tree. That's its essential nature. And your essential nature is that of a Buddha. So of course, given any encouragement, any nurturing, you're going to struggle to grow as a Buddha. And take the Buddha, don't have gender in that, see, as a Buddha. See, because this condition that we're talking about, see, transcends the realm of dichotomy. Literally, this is true. Another important point that I try to stress, and I just did, and I'm doing it again, because one of the things that I realize, and my Lord, when I think back to my beginning days with Roshi, it must have been almost terrifying for Roshi to have me come in the door, because I had to look just like a rock. It's amazing what the teacher looks at. But it just must have, poor Roshi, I suspect that maybe the reason he didn't make it to 85 was I cut off 20 of those years. Just, you know, it was, must have been horrible when I think about myself now and then. But we make the difficulty ourselves. Don't make Buddha, Buddha nature, your true nature, ordinary mind, big mind, whatever you want to call it. Don't make this a Mount Everest. Don't make the gateless gate, this like this fortress gate I saw when I was in Japan at Roshi's funeral that the palace was guarded by. Don't make, you know, have a little tiny garden gate, broken hinge. See? It truly is right here if you don't struggle. And when I say right here, I mean that literally. But I also equally tell you that it's not the way that we normally see it. All of you have eyes. See, you can see an old monk up here jabbering. You can see the walls. But do you have intimacy with this ordinary mind? So long as it's a conceptual understanding, so long as there is a separation, and no matter how skillful you handle the words, see, it's terribly obvious where we're sticking. We're sticking, see, still to this I am something special. This I am something special is the ego-driven self, the clinging self, the self of dualism. You cause you pain. And if you can be daring and decide to cast off from that shore, see, kate, gate, paragate, parasamgate. See, that means literally go to the other shore. See, well, where is the other shore? It's right here. But it's different. I was talking with somebody about this koan, you know, man hanging from a tree, person hanging from a tree with their teeth. See, now, if you're standing on top of the branch looking down, you talk about that scene altogether in a different way. But if you're hanging there, this big tree, see, you're hanging there like that, see, and you can't reach the limb, and you're just hanging, you're going to have a altogether different perspective of that limb. Some of you have heard me talk even about a mountain. Somebody can say, gee, that was an easy mountain to climb, but they don't know that until they actually climb it. So that's all you can say once you get to the top. Now, what we can also do is try to tell you that it's a climbable mountain, can be climbed, but nobody has ever told you that it's necessarily an easy mountain to climb. But I will tell you that the difficulties in climbing the mountain, we produce ourselves. And as soon as you're ready to be daring, and by daring, what I'm talking about is not some sort of a psychedelic jump, see, into this amazing cosmic kind of experience. Essentially, the jump is going to be into sort of a depressed state, meaning I'm not going to escape this little life that sucks. That's right. See? We start right there. Ground zero. We hear all sorts of stories, and particularly those of us that sort of came out of the 60s in the psychedelic world, Our heads were all stuffed up with lots of stuff, but we had lots of notions about what altered states were and things like that. And I think in a way that it was sort of difficult, Zen, because certainly most of the people that I know that started dropped away after a while because they found out that Zen itself is a very conservative kind of practice. It means total responsibility, carefully watching over your resources, see, and applying yourself in a very diligent way. Taking responsibility. Then this very mundane setting that you find yourself in, and again, if you're diligent, see, I'm not telling you a lie. If you will really apply yourself, see, and root out, see, or cut this root of delusion, all we're talking about here is the attachment. If you live on a mountaintop with great wealth, that's fine. If you're one of the folks, sleeping under the bridges, believe it or not, that will also be fine if we can sever this grasping mind. What comes up for you then? And this is Mahayana, and this will go into, by the way, the Heart Sutra, because I now think what I'm going to try to do is, in the New Year Sesshin, I think I'll try to give the series of 3 or 4 talks in there and do the Heart Sutra, because I do want to talk about that. And then maybe during the 90-day training period, I'll do the Song of Enlightenment. That's a particular favorite of mine. But on this, getting back to this is the ideal that I'm talking about and getting towards, see, is this Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, see, Avalokiteshvara, see, compassion, see. Bodhisattva, Bodhi, see, enlightened sattva being. Compassion. It's an amazing word. And I'll give you kind of another hint. See, this Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva doing deep prajna paramita. See, this is what we should be doing. Now, it's an interesting thing the way it's phrased. See, it says this great enlightened being of compassion is doing something, doing deep prajna, see, deep prajna, not messing around the edges, see, it's come right up close to it. But it sounds like there's a separation there, and that's the way the words would lead us to believe, see, that this great being, you, that this great being, see, absorbed in deep zazen. Now, if we're very careful, see, and how we use these words, zazen, no separation. This great, compassionate being absorbed in no separation. And Dogen is one of the first that beautifully talks about this. He says Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva is prajna paramita. See, the beauty of what you are, as you are, where you are, see, this is the intimacy that you have to experience. It has absolutely nothing to do with your station in life. Most of you have read, considerably in Zen, Layman Pang, see. Most of the folks, particularly those who don't have much aspiration for being a monk, and I didn't up until just a few years ago. It's always a shock how I find my life turns, and I have no control, period. That's one of the things real clear to me. But Layman Pang was a favorite of mine because he had, Mao Tzu was one of the greatest of Zen teachers. And Layman Pang used to go up and go after the monks. I read stories say the monks would see this crazy old layman climbing up the hill to see this famous master. Master and everybody else, the monks all ran and hid. Because he just wanted to come up there to do Dharma combat. And there's some great Dharma combat stories of him going after the old teacher or other monks. And he had an absolutely remarkable family. He and his daughter played with death. See. But Layman Pang took his wealth out into a river, see. He said, well, give it to charity. No, he said, you know, it in a certain sense, see, is the root. And we can talk, you know, there's many ways that you can look at these stories, see. But chucked it. But the fact is, then they lived a very simple, a life of poverty, actually. But I suspect those of you who have read Layman Pang, see, have thought, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful to be like him? Would it really? See, would it really? I mean, would you be able to live in a hut? I don't know what they did in carved kitchen utensils or something from bamboo. I suspect they did odds and ends. Would you really want to do that? And yet there's a magical quality, see, that we intuitively sense that something amazing was going on with this family. How about some of the old masters, you know, under bridges, taking care of the dead bodies that were thrown off. We read those and we're not repelled. See, something amazing was going on. What I'm trying to do is to instill within each one of you the thought, the realization, if you like, that you may not believe it at this point, but where you are, as you are, is an absolutely amazing place to be. The only problem that we have, and I know, because I'm trying at this point to do recall on my own experience when I was sitting there like this. And I used to hate it when people would give a talk like this and tell me how neat it is where I'm at. They bullshit. You know, you come over on the other side of these eyelids, you see. And the funny part about it, when I was sitting out there, I had a big home and cars and boats and motorcycles and, you know, and I remember even telling Roshi once like this. He said, just give it up. You know, I said, well, Roshi, I've given up everything. And I was living like that. See, it was amazing. Now I don't have anything. See? And it truly is, my life is just absolutely amazing for me. And I don't particularly have any concern about tomorrow. It really, the only problem, you see, is this discriminating consciousness. And it's driven behind this greed, anger, and ignorance. And out of the magic of the turning of the wheel where you are the center of the mandala of the universe. This is literally true. I'm not speaking in here in metaphor. Literally true. You are the eye of all existence. Dogen says that this is the eye that even the Buddha comes out of. You are an absolutely amazing creature, as you are. And where you are, as you are, is your karma. Now, instead of running off and having crystals run all over your body to polish up your aura, I actually had one person tell me that he'd like to come in and sit a little bit to polish up his aura. I'm sorry, I don't know what to say, you know. But do you want to take care of your karma? Take care of it one way or the other, I'll guarantee you, you won't avoid it. You may not even believe in it, but I'll guarantee you there is karma. And you are the living proof that there is karma. See, if we haven't distorted the word, see, we don't want to make karma too complicated. See, because there's nowhere that it doesn't function. Sort of like gravity pulls on you, just pulls on you, see. And there's only a problem so long as we maintain the illusion of separation. Separation gives birth to conflict, to clutching, to greed. This clutching, this greed gives rise to the anger. See? And this is all brought about because of this ignorance. And if you're daring, and if you say, my way hasn't particularly worked, then you might say, well, let's give this Buddha path a shot. See? And begin to release this clutching, grasping mind. Then you find yourself, you know, in the unique situation of finally recognizing all of those expectations that will never be met. See, that secret desire to desperately, it's so strong, see, to be something special. You are as you are. You're looking at the top of the heap. Disappointing, isn't it? And if you accept that, see, and then as you look out here, something starts to change. And by the way, the insight is always in an instant, sudden. See, they've argued in the past, you know, northern, southern school, sudden realization, gradual. No. The actualization is gradual. The insight is instantaneous. The problem then, as you start to look into what you are, is that you turn it into a conceptual structure. And it becomes a shadow train that you pull. And then you run around saying, I'm enlightened, appreciate me. The contradiction is right there. See, you have had some kind of an experience. You folks on the other side of that experience, meaning your poor deluded folks, see, appreciate. It's obvious. See, it doesn't take a great master to sit there in front of you. It's obvious. You haven't put the shadow train down. The insight may be perfect. But the difficult part of our practice is the actualization. It won't work for you. You are the center of the mandala where you're at. You are the center of the universe. You are creation itself. Literally true. And my Lord, isn't that a powerful enough seat to be in? And folks, if the wheel isn't turning right, The problem isn't with the outer edges of the wheel. The problem is there in the center. There is a separation. So long as you see a post driven into the center, big rigid post, I am here. Zazen says no separation. Not only are you the center of the mandala, you are all of the spokes, the wheels. There are no edges. There are no walls. There are no barriers. This is the unified Buddha of the three treasures. And if your mandala is screwed, it's because you're screwed. And then it's so simple to take care of your karma. This is what you take care of. Not pushing yourself up like a sore thumb, sticking out, big purple thing with bandages wrapped around it. See? But to blend in to this ordinary mind. Then you take care of this as Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, as this great enlightened being of compassion. This is literally true. Then your life isn't complicated. What do you take care of? Just this. Nyogen, how do I take care of this? With compassion, understanding. Not New Age sentimentality. Because all sorts of weeds grow in this mandala. And always we're having to take care of just this. You are never away from just this. And it doesn't mean your way, it means this way. This is the path of Buddha Dharma. See, it's right in front of you. The sutra says that. Even as you walk on it, if you miss it, you miss it. Buddha said, miss it by the diameter of an eyelash. And it's the difference between night and day. This is an amazing practice. This practice, see, has no outer fences. All of you sitting here, see, do you believe that? See, you know you were born. Some of the young ones don't fully appreciate it. Some of us are getting on the sort of the heavy side of the teeter-totter. No, we're going to die. See? That's a fact. Even my Roshi. I know he died. Goshen and I were there. We put him in an oven. Picked his bones up with chopsticks. I was pretty sure that that body was decomposed, turned into ash. Floated away, see? But if you enter this stream, see, of Buddha Dharma, if you enter into this unborn, you literally transcend time. And you enter in to the realm of no understanding. Beyond concepts, words, phrases. This has to be, not it would be nice, this has to be your experience. And what is it that you're experiencing? You're experiencing yourself. What you truly are. Not what the delusional thought patterns tell us. And the clearer you are, and any of you who have sat Sesshin is aware of this, Sesshin will be the best and the worst experience of your life. But when you finish it, something has happened. You don't know how to say it. You don't know what it is. But something. If you apply yourself, do I think you can also waste your time? Absolutely. But if you apply yourself, you'll know something has occurred. See, and the deeper, more penetrating your effort, the more you'll feel attraction. See, I want to do that again. And you'll surprise yourself because you'll say, geez, just a day ago I was saying, good God, get me out of here and I won't be back. And then all of a sudden you say, yeah, something's happening. See? And then if you're really not smart, like me, you'll get to the point where you hunger for this continuously. See? And that's how your life should become. See, so that you're always in deep retreat. It isn't that difficult. The difficulty rests with the twisted psychology, ego, see, and our delusional thoughts. We have ourselves pulled down into little concrete boxes. Trungpa Rinpoche, I think in either The Myth of Freedom or Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, I recommend both books if you haven't read them, really goes into some detail and talks about needing this panorama view. The panoramic view, that's kind of nice, see, because that's what we look out at. And there is a change. There truly is a different way you see. And you will also begin to see things that you never realized were there. And my teacher always told me, psyche stuff, junk. He said, it's always here. But we edit it out. And then you begin to see the turmoil you cause in your life. We can say that this is a selfish practice because you cause yourself suffering. And by diligently applying yourself to this way, you can take away that suffering. And when you take away that suffering, see, magically you melt into this mandala. And you turn, literally turn the universe. Can this really be done, Yogin? Absolutely. All it takes is your effort, your commitment, and the willingness to at least gamble. And say, I'm going to try to put down this grasping I know. Because you don't know. Right in this group, you don't know if you're going to get home tonight. That's your delusion. And if you put it off too long, see, you lose the rich opportunity to do this great practice. Hope that was a Dharma talk. Thank you.